Good morning. Welcome to the FTS Bet Slip on Wednesday, the 20th of July. I do hope you are well and have survived the heat. Well, a bit more on that in a minute. Apologies again. I've been quiet. Just been mega, mega, mega busy doing people Zooms, checking data. Obviously, the season's starting earlier, and it's just all becoming a bit of a rush. But we are getting there. I am. Particularly the way I've built up my end, with a lot of help, I hasten to add. Very, very excited for, not so much, I mean, you want it to get started, but more sort of when we get to end of August and we've got a bit of form settled down. coming through into the sheets, I think it's going to be a cracking year, certainly the way I'm going to bet, but obviously the one... out there, the one thing we can't control is this middle of the year World Cup nonsense. And as I said before, whether that will have any effect on anything, it's a lot different. Players not trying to be injured in September, October, than it would be in a normal end of season, in a normal World Cup year, when a lot of things have been decided and a lot of them, you know, have won the league or whatever, so can be rested or don't have to put a load of effort in. But, you know, we're going to be having that World Cup when we're barely into the middle of the season, and it's going to be, you know, full battle. Tottenham will be right up there challenging for the title. Good to see West Ham get pasted by Rangers last night. Spurs roll into Glasgow. I was meant to go to Scotland, but being busy, I just haven't had a chance to get up there. So I've booked a trip for next year instead. I do, as much as I rib my old mates up there, I do love it. I'd have loved to have come up last week while the Open was on and go to the Spurs game this week, but just life's just got in the way. It's just busy, just couldn't sacrifice the time. But West Ham turned up last night, got a good old pasting. But the proper team roll up into Glasgow on Saturday. Let's see how that goes. I think I saw today one of the saddest things I've seen in football. West Ham linked with Broja, the Chelsea forward who was on loan at Southampton, did well for Southampton last season, and West Ham are in for him, and an FTS member begging West Ham, please West Ham, get this done, actually tweeting the club, please West Ham, get this done. And new lows of absolute gutter patheticness they've reached. I mean, why do you need it? You had your best ever season last year. But absolute, please, West Ham, get it done. I thought, grown men, this is grown men. This is what social media has become. Grown men begging their football club, please get this done. What is going on? Honestly, I'll be good to get back into regular pods. I do miss them when I don't do. I just not had time. I do enjoy digging around for little snippets to talk about, get off my chest. I have had somebody own up to not listening anymore, so don't listen anymore, don't like the politics. Tory, of course. And I've had a good chat with a Tory, actually, a Tory voter, who FTS member, who believes Boris should stay. None of it made any sense, of course, and I told him that. We had a very civilised discussion. You know, but it's just the world we live in where you can't change people. But he raised things that perhaps I'll cover in another day. I do want him to come on a pod because I think it would be a great pod discussion. But it looks like we could end up, I don't know who we're going to end up, could be Truss or Rishi. Absolute nonsense, really. I mean, I just think they should cut their ties with that regime completely, but doesn't seem they're going to. I mean, they're just inept, and it's people. What as I try to explain to this guy, people get me wrong. If the Tory party stood up with sensible policies that were looking after the majority of people, I would have no problem considering voting for them. And the same with Labour, same with Lib Dems, same for the Monster Raven Loony Party. That's it's this tribal footballism sort of approach to it, that I'm voting them no matter what, which I find all a bit childish and inept and pathetic. And the transition, particularly when you've got people like Boris involved, the transition to just in a fit, everything's for themselves, ignoring what's going on completely, and just governing by slogan. We've targeted, very much like Trump did, targeted that if you say certain things, it rallies certain people up. And with the greatest respect, tends to be the wrong people, because they're the people who don't want to research anything. And, you know, I mean, I could do a pod about an FTS member, and I could go on for hours about the ridiculousness of him, and I could pull it all apart. But it's, you know, get Brexit done, Penny Mordaunt, PM for PM, Liz Truss, Liz for leader, Rishi, ready for Rishi, bring back Boris. You know, it is all complete and utter nonsense. It is just governing by slogan without actually telling. Not one of these people, and I haven't watched a lot of it because I just cannot bear watching them. They don't come and tell you, this is the problem that we've got, and this is my solution to it, and allow us to make that decision anymore. There's just none of that. It is all just by slogan and get them in, and basically talking complete and utter bollocks. And that is what they do, and they get away with it. Fair play to them. They've learnt a system and they get away with it. And they are absolutely taking the piss out of us. They are ripping the piss out of us to our faces, and they're just going to carry on doing it. We're very placid as an electorate. We sit back and just let it happen. They are absolutely talking bollocks and ripping the shit out of us, and that is what I object to hugely. The country in general, they're very selfish people. The country in general, we've just got too many selfish people. It's just grown. You know, I go back to, and people say, oh, you go back to the old days. I'm not saying the old days were better. I'm just saying there was more a sense of community and talking to people. And, you know, my gran walked down, everybody knew her and would help her out. And it's just, that's eroded over time. Just got too many people who can't see past themselves. If it doesn't affect me, then it's okay. You know, it's worldwide. We've got people in the world who can't get clean water. It's ridiculous in this day and age. You know, Chris Jones has got involved in a project doing that, and I'm going to help him with it when I get a bit of time. I'm going to get involved in it. You've got people in this country eating, more people in food banks and going to be dying in the winter, and it's not scaremongering. Never, oh, you're just scaremongering. It's not project. It's absolute facts. More people are eating out of food banks than ever before. The worst living standards since the 1950s. Household fuel, we're all seeing it, absolutely out of control. Going to get horrific in October. Car fuel out of control. And the current guy at the top, he's at a motion on Tuesday for a confidence vote in the government. He doesn't even know that his government's called it. All I want, it's just proper people doing proper governance rather than this clown show that's going on at the minute. All of them. The whole thing needs ripping apart and changing. It just sickens me. And yeah, I talk about it because it does sicken me. I'm getting more, particularly over the last 2 years, this era, more immune to it, because I just think, oh, well, I can't even watch that now because that just absolutely annoys the hell out of me. And I guess that's what they do. They wear you down, where you just go on and think, fucking hell. I mean, genuinely, people are going to stand up and say, they're going to, Liz Truss, you want Liz Truss as your PM? Genuinely? That's what people think we need? And then they're going to, and their argument to me then is, oh yeah, but you didn't want Boris. No, and I don't want fucking Liz Truss either. They're incompetents. They're absolutely terrible. But there we go. On a completely different note, I've had a lot of Zooms. I had a Zoom yesterday, amongst other things. A guy declared he's got... I love just... when obviously, when you get to know people and you start talking to them, you learn more about them, the snippets that come out. He's got a year's supply of food and water. He's one of them disaster food preppers. He's got solar everything. He actually disappeared on this Zoom call. He said, hang on a minute. He's telling me about this. He's gone, hang on a minute. He's got up, left, just left me hanging. He's come back with a solar charging unit, so I could actually see it. It's got this, it's like, I don't know what it's like. It's like a big sort of extension lead thing. It's got USB sockets, it's got plug sockets, and it all charges by solar. So then if your power goes down, you can put it in. He apparently doesn't have any electricity, everything is solar. And he's got solar light bulbs, which is basically, it's a little light bulb, I didn't even know these existed, a little light bulb on a hook. And you obviously put it in the sun to charge it. I imagine, he didn't tell me the charging process, but I imagine that's what you do, put it out in the sun to charge it. And it's got a little button on, you can then turn it on. It's just got a little hook. So it's like a proper light bulb, but it's just got a little hook. So he's just got little loops around the house. So he actually only needs one light bulb. just carry it around with him. When he needs a bit of light, hook it up, flip the switch. Yeah, it just made me chuckle. Just made me, I did say to him, you're flipping mad. But yeah, there you go. Just carry it around. And he said he only got three direct debits. I don't even know how that is possible, that you can only have three direct debits. One of them was his phone. I can't remember, he did tell me what they were. One of them was the phone. I can't remember what the other two were. Absolutely barking mad. Lovely, lovely, lovely man. Barking mad. I deal with some people here. Yeah. Amazing, amazing. When he can pull the light bulb out, I just thought, that is amazing. Just walk around hooking it up. Anyway, the purpose of today's pod is the golf. Obviously, with the football starting, going to have to jiggle around my week a bit. So golf will probably move till Wednesdays. We've got about 5-6 weeks till the FedEx Cup. I enjoy doing them, and I do the stuff for myself. So, you know, I like researching it, and it's just the extra work getting it in a pod format for you guys. So I will do them up to the FedEx Cup and then have a look. Obviously, with the World Cup, you know, when golf gets going through the winter, then that's not a problem. But I will probably do them on Wednesdays. I'll have more on that. We're looking at I'm looking at how I get the data for this and making it easier and quicker. I've got some APIs and things now. So, but I'm going to do a EFL anti-post next week on Tuesday. I'm going away. I've got a difficult couple of weeks. My boys moving house. What a cutthroat business this is now. His girlfriend's, she's a vet, she's given up twice, and then she's gone and got a job actually nearer us, in Kent. So she's having to travel out from London to there. So they're moving house. So they started this process of moving house, but they're coming away with us. And I didn't realise how difficult it is. Like a lottery for the house, like about 11 people interested. Anyway, they got picked out of, I don't know how this works now. It's all got to be sorted literally before we go away. So I'm in the process of helping with that. And they've got no furniture or anything. The place they rented is furnished. So I am going to move up to, firstly, I'm going to move up to their place and get it spick and span for leaving, so that, you know, all the holes in the walls where they've hung pictures and things, and they put some blinds up, and I don't think the landlord wants them, so I've got to sort all that out, and then get him. I'm going to be doing the old IKEA run. Whoever's in IKEA, look out for box in the car park. I've got to go and do all that. So I've got a real manic couple of weeks in amongst the football, but we will be doing next week. Sorry, I don't know why I just went off on a tangent telling you my calendar then. I've got So I'm going to do anti-post preview next week. I've got a little guest coming on that. I've got a little guest pod coming on the anti-post. I think you'll enjoy it. I've not discussed it. I've only arranged it with them. I haven't discussed it. I'm not sure what level that's going to take, but I think it'll be good fun. So we're going to do that next Tuesday, and then I'll sort out the football pods through the season, and then I'll move probably the golf to the Wednesdays. I want to try and do a football pod maybe a bit earlier than the Fridays, try and capitalise some prices, but we'll see. I'll work on all that over the next couple of weeks in amongst the other stuff. But right, golf. This one's about golf. Come on in, get to the point. 13 minutes of complete and utter waffle when you're meant to be doing the golf. Golf-wise, it was a fantastic Open Championship. I thought I briefly touched on it. The round of Cam Smith on Friday, on Sunday, unbelievable golf. The five holes around the turn had everything for me. I just thought it was absolutely brilliant. Obviously, crowd well behind Rory. Cam Young, who I thought would, I certainly would have been a layer of. Fair play to him, hung about. Scotty Scheffler, I think if you analyse his game, he was absolutely superb. Did not buy a putt all week. But what a leaderboard to have sort of over the last few holes. You've got, you know, world's best players going at it, particularly with Liv around one of the most iconic golf courses, well, if not the most iconic golf course in the world. And then, of course, you know, sort of elaborating again on the social media theme, mind-numbing talk of the course not being fit for an Open, pace of play. And it just, again, it highlights people's bias. It highlights the lack of intelligence. Basically, the fucking divs and idiots come out to play making such claims. There was pace of play. There were rounds of 6 hours. On the Friday and Saturday, there was 156 players getting around that golf course. Just as a guide, the Masters had 91 players and an average pace of play of 5 hours, 11 minutes to get round. Any sort of simple maths who tells you about averages tells you that to get an average of 5 hours, 11 minutes, you've obviously got to have some players below that and some players above that, and that's how you get your average. So for an example, it took Jordan Spieth 5 hours, 45 minutes to get round in the Masters. But when they're doing it in the Open, all of a sudden the course isn't fit for golf. The course, as a scoring venue, was low. You had, again, you had 156 players. There was no wind. It did have load of drivable par fours. But when we look at it, there was 478 rounds of golf played in the Open Championship last week on the old course. A total of 8,604 holes. If we deemed that five of those par fours were drivable, that's 478 times they were played, times five is 2,390 of the holes were possibly drivable. Again, people, whether it's because we're subjected to so much viewing in the Open, you can watch it from 6 in the morning till 9 at night, and people just build up a narrative because they hear it through the day quite often. Of balls that actually landed on the putting surface off the tee, it was 6.23%. That's it. 6.23% of the attempts to drive those holes. So there was a 94% of the field didn't drive those holes at any time during all 4 days. Compare that to 63% of players who hit the par 5 greens at Augusta in 2, which driving a par 4 is the same as hitting a par 5 in 2. So 6% of the players who can hit the par 4s at St Andrews, 63% hit the par 5s in 2, but apparently the par 4s are the problem and shouldn't be fit for golf. People just talk complete and utter shit. And then the final one was, oh, the winning score was 20 under. Yeah, the winning score was 20 under. And Dustin Johnson was 20 under at Augusta in 2020. And this year at Augusta, 51% of the players were under par. That year, sorry, when Dustin Johnson won it, 51% of the field were under par around Augusta. And St Andrews, about 50% of the field were under par this time. It is absolutely nothing to do with the golf courses. It is the fact that if Augusta is soft and playing in the right weather, they'll eat it alive. If St Andrews is playing in the right weather with no wind, they'll eat it alive. They are fantastic players, and the biggest thing is the equipment this year, this that they're using is making the game far too easy. And I've got real hand experience of this. I hit the golf ball, people have played with me, 280, something like that, 290, which is probably as far as I've ever hit it in 20 odd years. So I'm 30 years older, but hitting it further probably than I did when I used to play with persimmon clubs and Bellata balls back when I was half decent. I tried last week, and I've got a Callaway Epic driver, which is, what, 3-4 years old, something like that. And I hit that the other day, and then I hit one of these new TaylorMade Stealths. Pretty much same setup, shaft slightly different, but same flex, same loft. And this Stealth thing went about 20 yards past my ball. And I hit them both pretty similar. You know, you never say, oh, I hit it exactly the same, but I hit them on the same line. Quality of strike, I'd say, was pretty similar. And the new one went 20 yards further, the Stealth. I haven't bought it, somebody said try it. You know, that is the issue. And all the while they don't rein in balls and clubs, these courses, it doesn't matter where they are. If the players get the conditions, they are going to eat them alive. And that's what's happening. And it's simple as that. The narrative that the course isn't fit for an Open is absolutely ridiculous. You had Tiger Woods walking down the fairway in tears. Cam Smith said it's one of the best setups he's ever played. Jack Nicklaus has called winning at St Andrews the Holy Grail. Cam Young, who'd never seen it before, said the course was unreal, totally enjoyed it and absolute fun to play. Jordan Spieth said, I think the Open at St Andrews is arguably the best tournament we ever play. Ben Crenshaw, I want to thank nature for making this golf course. Seve, victory anywhere is sweet, but to win at St Andrews is so special it rises above everything else. The more you play it, the more you learn about the course and its nuances, the more you learn to appreciate it. Now it's my favourite golf course in the world. That was Rory McIlroy. I doubt if even in 100 years' time, a course will be made which has such interesting strategic problems and creates such enduring and increasingly pleasurable and excitement and varied shots. That was Alastair McKenzie, the guy who designed Augusta. Basically, those who know what they're talking about, those who've got half a clue, great champions, course designers, champions across the game and across many generations know a lot more than some bloke in Essex in his fucking underpants in his flat playing with his fucking bollocks and talking bollocks. We've had 4 major championships this year. 2 of them were absolutely great views, last week's and the US Open. One was a cracking watch, the USPGA, which unfortunately had a bit of a tragic end for Mito Pereira. And the other one was an absolute boring shitfest club championship round a flower garden. That's the facts. That is the absolute facts of it. It's the world we live in. Clueless fuck nuggets fucking commenting on stuff they should just shut up about. And it's every topic, isn't it? It's COVID experts on Twitter, golf course design experts on Twitter. You know, they know more than the top guys. The COVID experts know more than the scientists. The vaccine experts know more than the doctors and the research people. Yesterday, whilst the country was burning, the climate change specialists came out and became weathermen. The world is full of clueless fuckwits. And what they've all identified the big grift. They've identified that if they say things for clicks, be it on sport, be it on politics, be it on climate change, be it on COVID, they're going to get paid handsomely, because how the whole thing works is YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. If you've got lots of followers, you generate a lot of clicks, they'll put ads around you and you get paid for those ads. And the fact that we can't cotton on to that and instead we actually read the bit in the middle that they're writing, which is full of complete and utter bollocks, and then pay attention to it. I mean, yesterday, that's one of the reasons generally why I don't use Twitter now. People talking about arsonists out in full making all these fires. I'm no climate change fucking expert, but we haven't had 40 degrees before. And you can say, oh, we might have had it in 1700 when we didn't measure it. We may well have done. But every single civilised country in the world has got scientists who've said this climate change is an issue or climate crisis now. Every oil company, BP, Shell, all of them, all have sections on their website admitting that what they do causes climate problems. Every single one of them. I'd much rather listen to the scientists and those people than listen to some fucking numbnuts on Twitter who thinks that there was a bloke running around yesterday with a box of matches. I've no doubt that the odd fire would start with a barbecue and throwing the odd fag, but the fact of the matter, if the place wasn't burnt to a fucking cinder, it wouldn't go up, would it? Anyway, there we go. Enough of that. Golf. Where were we? It's all started. See, who else can go from St Andrews to Cinderbox fag butts? No one. There's not another podcast. We're too totally unique. You should listen more. The old golf, they do make me laugh. Absolute. But it's pointless arguing with them because they're thick as fucking mints. So it's. Shall I reply? No, because I'm dealing with absolute fucking empty head, thick as mints fuckpots. There we go. So we are at TPC Twin Cities in Minnesota. There's not another podcast, genuinely not one other podcast, doing the 3M Open in the Twin Cities at Minnesota that's had a 22-minute introduction like that. You should all be all privileged. We're at TPC Twin Cities in Minnesota. I'm a fucking idiot. For the fourth time, this tournament, it's 7,430 yards, a longish par 71. Mixed graph in the rough, bluegrass and fescues, very large green complexes, 6,500 square foot greens, 38 yard wide fairways, and the main defence, despite the length of it, and the main defence is water on a lot of the holes, but it is it's another one of these sort of birdie fest courses. We've had it three play-ins here. We've had winning totals of minus 21, minus 19 and minus 15. I see more of the same this week. I see it sort of minus 15 to minus 20 again. We've had winning prices of the three times it's here of 150 to 125 to 175 to 1. So good luck to those having a go pre-event. No one stat really stands out from the three plans when you look at it as what's taken to win here. Maybe a bomber. Cameron Champ won here last year. Matt Wolf, both can move it out there a bit. But Michael Thompson, who won it in the middle, certainly isn't. You basically just need to be above average for all the main stats, which isn't really massively helpful in a weakened field. And as we've only been here three times, there's not much, you know, other courses you look at and go, well, if they play that one, well, they should play that one. So it's a tough old puzzle to solve. Unfortunately, as the calendar, you know, I'm not a fan. They've moved the USPGA to May. I personally am not a fan. I think we have the majors far too condensed. So we tend to play the majors now 100 days, and we got 260 days then till Augusta next year. So everything becomes about the end of season. So in effect, the top players have just finished at the Open. They have a 2-3 weeks off now before the sort of FedEx Cup playoff phase. And I'm not sure that's great for the game. We end up with sort of three events over the next 3 weeks that they'll be okay, but they're not great. You don't get great fields. And it does, when it's like this, I think particularly pre-event, it just all makes it a bit of a crapshoot and a lot harder. So it's obviously reflected in the betting. The top 10 betting-wise this week is, favourite is Tony Finau. There you go. I did fancy Big Tony to go better last week. Didn't start great. His sort of indifferent year continues. He's arguably the best player here. There's not a massive amount between him and Matsuyama. Matsuyama probably got a bit more pedigree, obviously, a major winner. And he looked to be trending back to form for the US Open, which was kind of what I thought. Always, he's getting in his game, and St Andrews would suit him. I mean, he should just drive all those par fours and get on with it, and the game would be there, because it's so easy. You just drive all the par fours, Tony. That's, you know, that's how the game works. But he's stuttered since. He's ranked 148th in shots gained putting, with negative numbers against the field, clearly showing where his problems lie. And he's certainly not one I'd be jumping on at 17.5 pre-off, especially obviously only finishing Sunday and then having to make the transatlantic flight back home. Don't matter what way you do it, even if you're in first class, bit of jet lag, this, that and the other. So let's see how he goes and gets going in this week field event. Of course he can win it, as we sort of say about the top guys in the betting every week, but he's certainly not one I'd be putting any faith in pre-event personally. He's got the squiggle as well. If he does it the front, he can usually find a way to throw it away. Hideki Matsuyama next, 18. You'd probably say he's the class act in the field, multiple winner, major winner. Again, I thought he might do okay last week, nothing special. Another one who obviously played in the Open, so he's got the flight. Another one whose putting is letting him down. He is third this year in shots gained approach, which tells you what a good iron player and that he is, and 127th putting. If he can get the ball rolling, he's more likely wins it. But he's not been putting well, and it's one again to watch and see how he gets going. And they're kind of the tail of the field, to be fair. A lot of them just aren't very good putters. Sung Jae Im is next, again, having made the Atlantic crossing back from the Open. And collectively, when you look at the stats of the top three in the betting there, this guy is the best of the lot. He's 12th shots gained off the tee, 12th shots gained total, 69th putting with positive numbers against the field, where Matsuyama and Finau are both negatives. Fifth around the green, 13th in greens in regulation. So he's not got that one glaringly really bad stat, and he's not got anything where he's top of the tree. You know, fifth around the green, but with the big green complexes this week, I don't think that's going to be a massive issue. But yeah, if the travel's behind him, you could see a big run for him at 20. And then we move into sort of the lesser knowns, I guess you'd say, but Sahith Theegala. He did play the Open, played okay. capable of making a lot of birdies, which could suit him here. And he's having a really good year. You know, he lost in the Travelers just through, you know, we've said it a couple of times on this pod, just making a bad decision up the last. You know, I've just read out Sung Jae Im's rankings, 5th, 13th, 12th. You know, Sahith Theegalis tells you the sort of level of the field. He's 4th favourite. He's mid-70s across the board. But another one who gives shots away to the field on the greens. This guy will be scary around some of the ones he shoots. He does give himself so many birdie looks if he could putt properly. I think him and Tony this week would be the epitome of examples why I bet like I do now and not pre-event. Both really capable if they get it going. Both likely if they have a chance to win it to throw it away. And being able basically to see how they start, jump on that wave if they are playing well, and then bail out of that wave before they have a chance to make their cock up and lose it, suits me absolutely fine and dandy. Very much a player, Theegalis, if he gets it going this week, can be in the mix. But all four of those first four, as I say, also have that the travel and flight back. We then got Maverick McNealy, and he's done well in the week of fields recently. He played the John Deere, was 8th. He did fly over to the Scottish Open, finished 16th there, perfectly reasonable. And then he went back to the US after the Scottish Open. He didn't do enough in the Scottish Open to get into the Open, so he flew back and played in the Barracuda last week, where he finished tied 9th. His form the 5 weeks before that was pretty poor. Three missed cuts, a tied 75 and a tied 32. So he could be trending the right way, and in a weaker field like this, take his chance. If it comes this way, his worst stats, driving accuracy 134th, but with 40-yard, you know, nigh on 40-yard fairways, that can be negated this week. He is one of the higher ranked at putting at 33rd. He's 18th in birdie average. You know, having the advantage of travel back a week earlier than the guys, he's one to have on the radar. You know, McNealy could be one that we get involved with on Friday. I can see that for certain. Davis Riley is 25 on the exchange. A lot of these are the same. McNealy 26, Davis Riley 25, Theegalis. You know, the betting market can't really split them out. Davis Riley hasn't been seen since a tied 64th at the Travelers at the end of June. Had a really good run March to May, and this is something again in golf betting. Nobody can keep it going for 12 months. Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, that's about it. People tend to have good phases, and it's something then to look forward to next year, because quite often those phases repeat. Depends how they prepare and they're going to venues they like, types of grass on the West Coast compared to the East Coast, and sleep, all those sort of things can factor into it. And he had a really good run March to May. He had a second, a fourth, a fifth, but he hasn't been seen for the whole of June. Last visit was the last week of June at the Travelers, and with others having played more, and his form not being where it was in March, he's not one I would want to be on after a month off. The last time he took a month off, he missed the cut on his first event back. So sort of all these top names, you know, again, if he's up there, then we have a look. But I think it's certainly one I wouldn't be chalking on a betting slip on of all these names this week. Ken Davis, 27, again, very much around the same sort of price mark. 6th last week at the Barracuda, 8th in his previous start to that at the John Deere. Certainly seems to show, he seems a lot of people fancy him this week, seems to show up in the week field events. And I think potentially is, as a golfer, probably better than a lot of these in the field. But his numbers aren't massively convincing. You know, I watch him and think, oh yeah, he looks good, but then you look at the numbers, he's not in the top 70 of any of the main stats. You know, might be one that we have on the radar to trade. Each way punters may want to get involved, looking at he's finishing 6th, 8th. You know, he's in this sort of field, he might be up there again. But the underlying numbers, again, he's one that wouldn't be. It's let's see how he gets out the traps and goes. So it's very much a wait and watch this week. Adam Hadwin, 29. And if someone, and I include myself in this, not blowing my own trumpet, but those who've played with me, I'm a half-decent driver of the golf ball. It's one of my strong parts. Shots gained off the tee, as opposed to shots gained around the green. If somebody, and I'll include myself, could hit his tee shots, this guy wins. He's 120th in driving distance and 46th in accuracy, to be 127th in shots gained off the tee. And it must be killing him because he's 7th around the green, 66th putting, 36th tee to green, 33rd shots gained total, 31st total birdies. So, you know, when you've got to remember he's going to have the McIlroys and Thomases and that above him in those stats. You know, he's got pretty solid stats for this level of field. But the driving distance and accuracy has been pretty poor. He's played here and had a 4th and a 6th. He's played 2 of the 3 showings here. And I can honestly say he'd be the only one that I would be putting any money on pre-event. Certainly one for the mix. And I think the reason he has had a 4th and a 6th is the fact that the fairways are wider, so the driving's a bit less relied upon. I think he's a big runner this week, Hadwin. He is certainly in the notebook. And he is one who hangs around if he gets up there. I've said that about him before when he got off to a great start at the US Open. He doesn't tend to disappear. So Hadwin definitely on the radar. Cameron Tringali, he's 32 and is now the holder of probably the most unenviable position on tour. He is the winner of the most money on the PGA Tour without winning an event. He has won a cool $17.2 million. You can see why they need Liv, don't you? And never won an event. He was 6th in Scotland at the Scottish Open, hot out the traps, leading after round one there by 3. 62nd last week in the Open, but another one. He's 135th in shots gained off the tee, and having played the Open, his transatlantic exploits, he had a big week in Scotland, which had taken some out of him. Having a fly back, his failure to get over the line in his career, he is an easy swerve for me. He's playing okay, and you know, another one capable of making a lot of birdies, but certainly pre-event, an easy swerve for me at that price. And then we have Brendan Steele completing the top 10, 38 on the exchange, 3-time tour winner, 4th in shots gained off the tee. So instantly I think, but woeful putting, down in 194th. He did start the year with 5 straight miscuts and has picked up. He was 9th at the PGA, 10th at the Memorial, 25th at the Travellers, but another one we've not seen him. And I never understand why when they're on a run of playing well they stop. Particularly when you've had 5 miscuts at the start of the year, can't say you're over-golfed. So the fact that he hasn't played for a month, the fact that his putting is woeful, I'm going to strike a line through it. I will say if he puts well round one, I will certainly open my eyes. He's capable of going low. He's had a career low 61, so I would be looking to trade this guy. But it will be all about where he is after round one and what those putting stats look like for me. We then move into sort of the others outside the top 10 that might catch the eye. Nick Hardy is 55. He's the form horse. I thought he should be perhaps a bit shorter in this field. He's 14th at the US Open, 8th at the Travellers, 30th at the John Deere, 13th last week. So he's not been out of the top 30. 22nd overall shots gained off the tee. And playing with that one seemingly sort of statistic that we can't measure and seems confident. Really good US Open kind of kicked him. I wouldn't be surprised to see a big run from Nick Hardy this week. I do think you know, you make these statements and then they go and shoot 75 first round, but I do think he's going to be up there. Martin Laird, the journeyman Scot, he's 55 on the exchange, 3rd last week, 4-time PGA winner. Deserves a mention in this field. I'm not sure he's long enough to compete. He's 111th in driving distance. But of those playing this week, he ranks 5th in the field tee to green and 6th in the field shots gained approach, with a 3rd place last week. Again, giving that confidence a bit of a boost. He just needs respect and he is capable of winning out here. As I say, he's got 4 PGA Tour wins and he can win in this company. The defending champ, is Cameron Champ. And he is 60. Very patchy player. Once again, topping the driving distance this season, at about 320 yards. Ninth in shots gained off the tee. You know, another one, if he turns up, he hasn't been playing well, but if he turns up at this course and gets those good vibes, he could be go again, you know, for the good memories and, I played it like this and start seeing the right shots. He is struggling putting. He's 181st so total, which again, you know, story of so many of them this week. So 181st in that rank. You know, if he can get the putter going, he's good off the tee. You know, he's in the top three in the field off the tee of those playing. So if he gets the putter going, certainly one to look for a trader. And he would be capable of a repeat win. I mean, we don't get them that often, but he would be capable. So they're just ones to keep an eye on. Cam Champ, Laird and Hardy. And I think Ricky Fowler as well. Ricky Fowler, 60. You know, he's been in the doldrums, occasionally flashes of his old self. Lots of talk of him going to live, whether he will or not, I don't know. You know, they're announcing three more this week. Stenson's sold out the Ryder Cup, I think. I get why they go, but just think it's disgusting the way he's done it. Don't take the Ryder Cup captaincy if you're even contemplating it. Fowler, you know, he's one who needs to push up the rankings, and I think he could perhaps see this week as an opportunity to do that. And on his day, he is better than most of these. So again, just one to keep an eye on. And then that brings us to the flyer. So, you know, Burmester and Detry last week gave reasonable performances. The former Burmester, a respectable tied 11th. I did think St Andrews would suit him. But this week, we're going for a bit of a character, Harry Higgs. He is 210 on the exchange. He is a character, plays with a smile on his face, not your stereotypical sort of modern golfer, overweight, laughing, joking. And by his own admission last week, he played at the Barracuda. He said he's looking at his mates that he grew up with playing better than him and realising that, you know, he's taken it a bit too light and he's better than his results are showing and he needs to knuckle down. And unfortunately, his sort of laissez-faire attitude have left him on the brink of losing his tour card. 125 players keep their card. He's down in 142nd and running out of weeks to get up the rankings. So these events like this, particularly when you've got weakened field for players like this, are absolutely huge. Having come out and said that last week and given himself a pep talk, he finished 11th last week. Some good FedEx Cup points on the table this week. He is much better than his start showed as a golfer. He is. And if his kick up his arse has worked, then he's better than 210. It is really difficult game. I've said this before. Just to turn up and turn your game on. I remember being in Mallorca. I used to go to Mallorca every year on a golf holiday. And a guy had got something like... for those who play golf, Stableford points, he's got like 20 points. So it's like 16 over his handicap. So he had a handicap of about 15. And then he's had another 16 shots over that out on the golf course. So in effect, he's like 30-odd over par. So he's shooting round about 100. And then he sat in the bar afterwards. And when we flew back, it was going to be their club champs or their captain's prize or something. And he sat in the bar after talking about winning it. And I sort of said to him, well, great respect, you've just got like shot 100. I can't see you being a threat to the whatever it was captain's prize say at the weekend. He said, what you don't realise about me, this is gospel truth, let me dead in the eye, he said, what you don't realise about me is I can turn my game off and on. I mean, the shit that people come out with, I can turn my game off and on. To which one of my other friends, just literally next to me, over my shoulder went, I've got to be honest, if you could turn your game off and on, why would you ever turn it off? It was just an absolute beauty of a line, which is dead true. But you can't just turn your game on. You know, it is very much a confidence game, and you skill, talent, practice, hard work, like everything, and then if you get confident, the game seems a little bit easier. When you're struggling, it is a brutal game. And Harry Higgs has been struggling. He is trying to jump himself out of it, and if he does, then he is better than 210. But we go into these sort of bets or trades, and I think some of you have traded these quite nicely, these big ones, knowing what we're getting in at. You know, he's 210 for a reason. I do personally think it's a bit big. He is better than that, but you've still got to turn up and produce the goods. So that is the 3M Open. Whether I entertained you or not, I don't care. I entertained myself for 45 minutes. I will, as usual, post some bets trades Friday if anything qualifies. Not looking at Europe this week, just focusing on this one, and we'll just see what happens, see what qualifies, see what the market is like, and try and get you some more golf cash in the old golf room over the weekend. Right, have a lovely, what day is it? A lovely Wednesday. And I honestly don't know when I'll be back. I really am just focusing on this. I'll definitely be on next Tuesday to do the anti-post for the EFL, but if I can fit anything in between, I will jump on. I do want to do some stuff on staking. I've got a thing. Actually, I want to ask a question. This is a really interesting dude. I forgot about this. Oh, Christ almighty, I've done the draw for the testimonial. I nearly forgot that. What an absolute shit show. Don't leave, don't go, nobody go. Let's do the staking bit first. I'm really intrigued whether anybody can drop me a line. I was talking to somebody about staking the other day, and I actually didn't realise that people still did shit like this. And it might be me. I might have it all wrong. But does anybody utilise staking plans such as things like Fibonacci, XYZ, anything, any staking plan? We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, any of them. You know, all these software things have bet engine, staking machine, they all have. Does anybody actually bet utilizing a staking plan? I'm not going to dig you out. I'm not doing this to make you look silly or call you out. I'd just love to know, and I'd love to know what was your thinking to lead to use it and how you apply it. You know, obviously, if you don't want to give too much away, that's fine. Just say, yeah, I use Fibonacci or whatever, and how you get on with it. I'm just really interested to know whether people are utilising. I had a conversation with somebody the other day about a Fibonacci thing, and it just got my brain whirring. And I thought, when I do the staking podcast, and I want to do some stuff on Kelly and having more on the right stuff, this, that and the other, which all makes common sense. I just was really interested whether there was people out there utilising any of those staking plans. Really interested if you're doing it successfully, but equally interested if you've had an absolute mare, if you've gone down a Fibonacci sequence that's absolutely wiped you out. I'd love to know, and I promise you I won't go further than me. I won't mention names and I won't dig you out. It is purely for my own sort of overview of how people bet. And yesterday we did the draw for the testimonial. So thank you everybody who sent those in. We had 416, bear in mind you got 10 for a video. We had 416 tickets in the draw, and the winner was, and it was a draw done by the team. The secretary did it. I just put the names down and listed it. The secretary actually did the draw. I call it the secretary. It's Kerry, who helps us with the email. I said, please can you draw this? And we have got I lost my brains then. We have got, I'm looking for the winner's name, that's why, because I can't find it. It is Jason Caton is the winner of the draw. So Jason, I will be in touch with you. I think I've got a sneaky feeling he's a West Ham fan, might be wrong. But I've got Jason, I'll be in touch with you over all that and £1,000 trading bank and how we're going to look to grow that. So thanks everybody, and Jason, I will be in touch. Right, that's it, now I am done. I don't know when I'll be back, but I'll be back at some time. Have a lovely Wednesday. I'm a shower of shit. Beautiful podcast, I've loved it, and I'll see you or speak to you all sometime over the next week.